Chapter 2. By 7:30 in the morning, the ship being then in sight the harbor at last, and moored within a long stone's throw from the quay, my stock of philosophy was nearly exhausted. I was dressing hurriedly in my cabin, when the steward came tripping in with a morning suit over his arm. Hungry, tired, and depressed, with my head engaged inside a white shirt irritatingly stuck together by too much starch, I desired him peevishly to heave round with that breakfast. I wanted to get ashore as soon as possible. Yes, sir. Ready at 8, sir. There's a gentleman from the shore waiting to speak to you, sir. This statement was curiously slurred over. I dragged the shirt violently over my head and emerged staring. So early, I cried. Who's he? What does he want? On coming in from sea, one has to pick up the conditions of an utterly unrelated existence. Every little event at first has the peculiar emphasis of novelty. I was greatly surprised by that early caller, but there was no reason for my steward to look so particularly foolish. Didn't you ask for the name? I inquired in a stern tone. His name's Jacobus, I believe, he mumbled shamefacedly. Mr. Jacobus! I exclaimed loudly, more surprised than ever, but with a total change of feeling. Why couldn't you say so at once? But the fellow had scuttled out of my room. Through the momentarily open door I had a glimpse of a tall, stout man standing in the cuddy by the table on which the cloth was already laid. A harbor table cloth, stainless and dazzlingly white. So far good. I shouted courteously through the closed door that I was dressing and would be with him in a moment. In return the assurance that there was no hurry reached me in the visitor's deep, quiet undertone. His time was my own. He dared say I would give him a cup of coffee presently. I am afraid you will have a poor breakfast, I cried apologetically. He have been 61 days at sea, you know. A quiet little laugh, with a "That'll be all right, Captain," was his answer. All this, words, intonation, the glimpsed attitude of the man in the cuddy, had an unexpected character, a something friendly in it propitiatory. And my surprise was not diminished thereby. What did this call mean? Was it the sign of some dark design against my commercial innocence? Ah! These commercial interests spoiling the finest life under the sun. Why must the sea be used for trade and for war as well? Why kill and traffic on it, pursuing selfish aims of no great importance after all? It would have been so much nicer, just to sail about with here and there a port and a bit of land, to stretch one's legs on, buy a few books, and get a change of cooking for a while. But, living in a world more or less homicidal and desperately mercantile, it was plainly my duty to make the best of its opportunities. My owner's letter had left it to me, as I have said before, to do my best for the ship, according to my own judgment. But it contained also a postscript worded somewhat as follows. Without meaning to interfere with your liberty of action, we are writing by the outgoing mail to some of our business friends there who may be of assistance to you. We desire you particularly to call on Mr. Jacobus, a prominent merchant and charterer. Should you hit it off with him, he may be able to put you in the way of profitable employment for the ship. Hit it off. Here was the prominent creature absolutely on board asking for the favor of a cup of coffee. And life not being a fairy tale, the improbability of the event almost shocked me. Had I discovered an enchanted nook of the earth, where wealthy merchants rush fasting on board ships before they are fairly moored? Was this white magic or merely some black trick of trade? I came in the end, while making the bow of my tie, to suspect that perhaps I did not get the name right. I had been thinking of the prominent Mr. Jacobus pretty frequently during the passage, and my hearing might have been deceived by some remote similarity of sound. The steward might have said Antrobus or maybe Jackson. But coming out of my stateroom with an interrogative Mr. Jacobus? I was met by a quiet S, uttered with a gentle smile. The yes was rather perfunctory. He did not seem to make much of the fact that he was Mr. Jacobus. I took stock of a big, pale face, hair thin on the top, whiskers also thin, of a faded nondescript color, heavy eyelids. The thick smooth lips in repose looked as if glued together. The smile was faint. A heavy, tranquil man. I named my two officers, who just then came down to breakfast. But why Mr. Burns' silent demeanor should suggest suppressed indignation I could not understand. While we were taking our seats round the table, some disconnected words of an altercation going on in the companionway reached my ear. A stranger apparently wanted to come down to interview me, and the steward was opposing him. You can't see him. Why can't I? The captain is at breakfast, I tell you. He'll be going on shore presently, and you can speak to him on deck. That's not fair. You let, I've had nothing to do with that. Oh, yes, you have. Everybody ought to have the same chance. You let that fellow, the rest I lost. The person having been repulsed successfully, the steward came down. I can't say he looked flushed, he was a mulatto, but he looked flustered. After putting the dishes on the table, he remained by the sideboard with that lackadaisical air of indifference he used to assume when he had done something too clever by half, and was afraid of getting into a scrape over it. The contemptuous expression of Mr. Burns' face as he looked from him to me was really extraordinary. I couldn't imagine what newbie had stung the mate now. The captain being silent, nobody else cared to speak, as is the way in ships. And I was saying nothing simply because I had been made dumb by the splendor of the entertainment. I had expected the usual sea breakfast, whereas I beheld spread before us a veritable feast of shore provisions. Eggs, sausages, butter which plainly did not come from a Danish tin, cutlets, and even a dish of potatoes. It was 3 weeks since I had seen a real, live potato. I contemplated them with interest, and Mr. Jacobus disclosed himself as a man of human, homely sympathies, and something of a thought reader. Try them, Captain, he encouraged me in a friendly undertone. They are excellent. They look that, I admitted. Brown on the island, I suppose. Oh, no, imported. Those grown here would be more expensive. I was grieved at the ineptitude of the conversation. Were these the topics for a prominent and wealthy merchant to discuss? I thought the simplicity with which he made himself at home rather attractive. But what is one to talk about to a man who comes on one suddenly, after 61 days at sea, out of a totally unknown little town in an island one has never seen before? What were, besides sugar, the interests of that crumb of the earth, its gossip, its topics of conversation? To draw him on business at once would have been almost indecent or even worse, impolitic. All I could do at the moment was to keep on in the old groove. Are the provisions generally dear here? I asked, fretting inwardly at my inanity. I wouldn't say that, he answered placidly, with that appearance of saving his breath his restrained manner of speaking suggested. He would not be more explicit, yet he did not evade the subject. Eyeing the table in a spirit of complete abstemiousness, he wouldn't let me help him to any eatables, he went into details of supply. The beef was for the most part imported from Madagascar. Mutton, of course, was rare and somewhat expensive. But good goat's flesh, are these goat's cutlets? I exclaimed hastily, pointing at one of the dishes. Posed sentimentally by the sideboard, the steward gave a start. Lor, no, sir. It's real mutton. Mr. Burns got through his breakfast impatiently, as if exasperated by being made a party to some monstrous foolishness, muttered a curt excuse, and went on deck. Shortly afterwards, the second mate took his smooth red countenance out of the cabin. With the appetite of a schoolboy, and after 2 months of sea fare, he appreciated the generous spread. But I did not. It smacked of extravagance. All the same, it was a remarkable feat to have produced it so quickly, and I congratulated the steward on his smartness in a somewhat ominous tone. He gave me a deprecatory smile, and, in a way I didn't know what to make of, blinked his fine dark eyes in the direction of the guest. The latter asked under his breath for another cup of coffee, and nibbled ascetically at a piece of very hard ship's biscuit. I don't think he consumed a square inch in the end, but meantime he gave me, casually as it were, a complete account of the sugar crop, of the local business houses, of the state of the freight market. All that talk was interspersed with hints as to personalities, amounting to veiled warnings, but his pale, fleshy face remained equable, without a gleam, as if ignorant of his voice. As you may imagine, I opened my ears very wide. Every word was precious. My ideas as to the value of business friendship were being favorably modified. He gave me the names of all the disponible ships together with their tonnage, and the names of their commanders. From that, which was still commercial information, he condescended to mere harbor gossip. The Hilda had unaccountably lost her figurehead in the Bay of Bengal, and her captain was greatly affected by this. He and the ship had been getting on in years together, and the old gentleman imagined this strange event to be the forerunner of his own early dissolution. The Stella had experienced awful weather off the Cape, had her decks swept, and the chief officer washed overboard. And only a few hours before reaching port the baby died. Poor Captain H and his wife were terribly cut up. If they had only been able to bring it into port alive, it could have been probably saved. But the wind failed them for the last week or so, light breezes, and... The baby was going to be buried this afternoon. He supposed I would attend. Do you think I ought to? I asked, shrinkingly. He thought so, decidedly. It would be greatly appreciated. All the captains in the harbor were going to attend. Poor Mrs. H was quite prostrated. Pretty hard on H altogether. And you, Captain, you are not married, I suppose? No, I am not married, I said. Either married nor even engaged. Mentally I thanked my stars, and while he smiled in a musing, dreamy fashion, I expressed my acknowledgments for his visit, and for the interesting business information he had been good enough to impart to me. But I said nothing of my wonder thereat. Of course, I would have made a point of calling on you in a day or two, I concluded. He raised his eyelids distinctly at me, and somehow managed to look rather more sleepy than before. In accordance with my owner's instructions, I explained. Who have had their letter, of course? By that time he had raised his eyebrows too, but without any particular emotion. On the contrary, he struck me then as absolutely imperturbable. Oh, you must be thinking of my brother. It was for me, then, to say H. But I hope that no more than civil surprise appeared in my voice when I asked him to what, then, I owed the pleasure. He was reaching for an inside pocket leisurely. My brother's a very different person. But I am well known in this part of the world. You've probably heard, I took a card he extended to me. A thick business card, as I lived. Alfred Jacobus the other was earnest dealer in every description of ship's stores. Provisions, salt and fresh, oils, paints, rope, canvas, etc., etc. Ships in harbor victualled by contract on moderate terms, I've never heard of you, I said brusquely. His low-pitched assurance did not abandon him. You will be very well satisfied, he breathed out quietly. I was not placated. I had the sense of having been circumvented somehow. Yet I had deceived myself, if there was any deception. But the confounded cheek of inviting himself to breakfast was enough to deceive anyone. And the thought struck me. Why? The fellow had provided all these eatables himself in the way of business. I said. You must have got up mighty early this morning. He admitted with simplicity that he was on the quay before 6 o'clock waiting for my ship to come in. He gave me the impression that it would be impossible to get rid of him now. If you think we are going to live on that scale, I said, looking at the table with an irritated eye, you are jolly well mistaken. You'll find it all right, Captain. I quite understand. Nothing could disturb his equanimity. I felt dissatisfied, but I could not very well fly out at him. He had told me many useful things, and besides he was the brother of that wealthy merchant. That seemed queer enough. I rose and told him curtly that I must now go ashore. At once he offered the use of his boat for all the time of my stay in port. I only make a nominal charge, he continued equably. Why man remains all day at the landing steps? You have only to blow a whistle when you want the boat. And, standing aside at every doorway, to let me go through first, he... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.